Hey, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Forest City North Church. We're a church in London, Ontario. And our hope is that this message that you're listening to will have an impact on your life. I encourage you to grab a coffee, make yourself a tea, sit back, and enjoy this message. All right, so I want to ask you a question to start our conversation this morning. I want to ask you, have you ever been part of something or done something that has made you feel alive? That you entered into this moment and you felt like something inside of you clicked. Something inside of you was unleashed and you entered into this space and you felt like everything was lining up inside of you. Your heart, your mind, your soul, everything just kind of clicked. And maybe it was a moment when you took a paintbrush and some paint off of a palette and put it on a canvas, and an hour later there was an image on the canvas, and when you were finished, you were like, I had no idea this was inside of me, but it felt so good. It unleashed something in you. Or maybe you were asked to lead a team meeting at your work, and your manager said, I want you to lead it. You were terrified. But after the hour leading it, you finished, and you went, man, that felt so right. Something inside of you was unleashed, and you thought, I got to do this again. Or maybe it was writing a song. A song inside of you started stirring, and you started putting pen to paper, and then you sat down at a keyboard or started strumming a guitar, and a song just kind of came out of you. You're like, what? Like, where'd that come from? And you're like, this felt so good. I feel so alive in this moment. I feel like I've been unleashed to live into this. Or maybe you went streaking for the first time, and you felt alive. Okay, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I've been dying to share something with you that happened to me yesterday. I wasn't streaking, just so we're clear. But I did a wedding, and this has nothing to do with the talk, but I wanted to share it with you so bad. I've been dying to share this with you. I was doing a wedding at Port Stanley yesterday and on the beach, and we were right in the middle of the vows. And I've got my back to the water, and the couple's there, the arbor's there, and we're right into it. We repeat after me, and I could hear everybody laughing. And I didn't know what was going on until I glanced to my right, and these two dudes were stark naked, running behind the group of people, and they were streaking. It's a wedding I will never forget. And if you actually look up my name on Facebook, I'm tagged in all kinds of pictures of streakers. And there's actually live video of it, Facebook Live. I saw it. It's awesome. It's epic. It's these guys felt unleashed. Totally. Yeah, it's like, woo, okay. And it was cold. Anyway, so where are you guys going with that? You feel unleashed. In 1979, get back on track. In 1979, my family, some of you have heard me share this, moved from the Toronto area to New Brunswick. 1979, I was 10 years old. And we moved from a neighborhood in the Toronto area where we had curbs and pavement, where we had to yell car, you know, because we played ball hockey. I had to go in at night when the streetlights came on. But in 1979, my parents decided to move to New Brunswick, to the wild frontier of country living, where there was no curbs, where there was very little pavement. I lived in a little corner called Victoria Corner. If you blinked, you missed it. But when we moved in 1979, a whole world opened up to me that I'd never experienced before. It was like this incredible experience of feeling like alive. Not that the experience in the Toronto area was bad or wrong, but there was something about living in the country, in the wild frontier of New Brunswick. I can remember building forts with my friends in the trees. We had three-level forts. We were serious fort builders. And we would have these forts, and you have to climb in on the top to get down into it because we didn't want enemies getting in there. But then we thought, well, let's take it to the next level, and let's actually have BB gun fights. And so we would chase each other around the woods with BB guns and shooting each other. I don't recommend it, but we did it. It was so much fun. There was adventure, the thrill. I worked on a farm, milking cows and carrying the bucket to the cooler. Nowadays, I don't think they do that anymore, but we have to pour it in. And this world opened up to me. Hunting was a new thing for me, too. And I actually brought a picture Want to see the picture of me? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is me. This is my 20-gauge shotgun. That bird right there fed my family on Thanksgiving. And the only reason I'm showing this picture is to prove that I had hair at one point. That's an epic picture. You can get rid of it. Because some of you are like checked out now. Oh, he hunts and kills birds. Anyway, I'll probably get emails now for that one. But it was interesting because this world opened up. Now, adventure, thrill, great things, awesome things, dirt bikes, three-wheelers, driving pickup trucks when you were like 13 in the fields. Like, I don't know what the farmer was thinking, but man, he gave us this, and this world opened up. Now, here's the thing. When I was a kid, we went to this little country church in New Brunswick, and I can remember sitting in church bored out of my mind. I can remember being so bored with the talks. We didn't call them talks back then. We called them sermons. I can remember sitting in church bored with the music, and I the spiritual giant that I was when I was a kid, I slept through most services. I was like out. But Sunday school was different. It's a little gathering of the kids prior to the big person service that they made us sit in. But Sunday school was this place where we learned the stories of the Bible. And to show a bit of my age, we had these things called flannel graph, and they had cut out figures of Bible characters, and the teacher would move it across. It was like nothing like today what kids have. They're spoiled rotten. They're missing out. But I learned about Noah. I learned about this guy named Noah that God said, I want you to build this big boat, and I'm going to send a flood, and I want you to do this. And he spends time building this boat, and people are making fun of him, mocking him, but he just walks in obedience, and he does what God wants him to do. Or I think about a woman named Esther who's stunningly beautiful, and a king sees her and says, I want her to be my queen, and she becomes his queen. And then she steps into a moment and steps into his space and makes a request of him where she should never have done, but she took the risk and stepped into the moment to stand up for her people because they were being oppressed. And so she stepped in and did it. Or a guy named Peter. I can still remember him on the flannel graph getting out of the boat, walking on water. And he did this. He did this crazy thing and he stepped out. See, for me, I had these two worlds running. I had this world of living in a way filled with adventure and thrill and fun and ridiculous things like BB gun wars. But then I saw a faith in the Bible that was disconnected. It didn't make sense to me. Because the faith that I saw was a faith more about being polished, getting it into a small little box, living within the confines of the curb. I didn't define it like this back then because I didn't have the smarts, but it was more of just seeing faith more domesticated. There was fine-tuned. It was getting in line. It's like all the teachers this week trying to get their little ones in elementary school to line up. It's like, get back. You know, that's what I saw faith to be, a complete disconnect. But as I go along and as I step into this thing of faith and begin to put those two worlds together over time, I begin to realize this simple truth that Jesus never intended the Christian faith and the journey of faith to be polished, to be comfortable, to be easy. That Jesus intended faith to be unleashed, that it was to be filled with things greater than ourselves. It was filled to be with adventure. It was about faith taking steps even when you're unsure of the path, but yet you felt pulled to do it. And so it was obedience, it was risk, it was just taking those steps forward. That's, I think, what Jesus wanted for us. I'm convinced that Jesus wanted our faith to be unleashed, not polished and neat and tidy. Today we're beginning this new series, as some of you are aware. We're beginning this brand new series called Unleashed. And what we're going to do for the next 4 weeks is we're going to do our absolute best to pull apart what God intended you to have as a faith that's unleashed. So we're going to do our best to look at what Jesus has asked of us, the path that he calls us to. And so we're going to talk about an unleashed life. We're going to talk about an unleashed heart. We're going to talk about unleashed gift and unleashed relationships. But here's the thing. As we begin this series, I want to just set it up for you. If you are a part of Forest City North Church, you call this home. This is your church. I'm going to challenge you to look at your life of faith and how it connects to the vision and mission of our church. So there's a vision and mission component to this series as well. And I'm going to be talking about that each week and how it links into who we are as a church. Maybe you're here this morning and you're exploring faith. Anthony talked about that a few minutes ago. Maybe you're exploring and just interested and curious and trying to put some of the pieces together. I'm going to paint a picture for you that will draw you in, hopefully, to help you understand those steps, next steps for you. But then there's a third group of people that I need to chat with this morning as we start this series is this. Maybe you're a person who's come from another church. And maybe you're curious about the North here and you're kind of like you've heard some rumblings about it. I want to say this to you. We're going to paint a picture of what the vision and mission of this church is. And I want to put it out there to you. If this aligns with what you believe the church to be, then awesome. If it doesn't, we'll bless you as you go and find another church. I'm trying to say that graciously. We'll bless you as you try to find a place that fits who you are. Because we have a clear picture of what and who we are as a church. And so for the next 4 weeks, we are just going to unpack all this and take a look at it and live into it. And my hope and my prayer is that each and every one of us, no matter where we find ourselves, will go, yeah, sign me up. I'm in. All right, so let's talk about this together. Let's take a step into our first full-blown conversation of what it means to have an unleashed life, an unleashed faith. I want to take you to a section in the Bible called the New Testament, and there's a book in the New Testament called John. And I want to talk with you a little bit about this moment where Jesus describes he has this illustration of sheep and a shepherd. Now, it's interesting because Jesus does this when you look at his teachings. He actually does this thing where he takes an illustration of the day that makes sense to the people. Today, maybe he'd use a dog park. I don't know what he would do today, but that's what he did. And so in this section of John, he begins to talk about how there are sheep that are in this sheepfold and that the shepherd comes through a gate and he speaks to the sheep and they identify who he is. They know his voice and they follow him. And so there's this element of, and this picture of illustrating sheep leaving the gate and following the shepherd, and he leads them out into pasture. Now, what's interesting about this illustration is Jesus gives the other side of this, where he says, now there's someone else who comes into the sheepfold, and that's the robber, that's the thief. They try to come over the edge of the sheepfold, and they try to confuse and steal sheep. Now, you got to be careful here because you can pull back the layers of this, and Jesus is actually doing some very significant things about Gentiles and the Israelites, and he's talking to a group of people and trying to teach them on this, and I don't want to get into that today, but what I love what Jesus does for us is that Jesus paints a very clear picture that he is the one who has sheep who know his voice and they follow him, and there's another one who comes who tries to steal, kill, and destroy. Look what he says in verse 10 of John chapter 10. He says, the thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. Jesus, in this moment, paints a picture of what we have going on in our lives. He illustrates it, and there's a contrast. Now, I don't know if you live this way or have this perspective on yourself, but I live with this fundamental belief that God has created each of us as human beings for meaning and purpose. That there's meaning and purpose designed for us. We are created in the image of God, so therefore there is meaning and purpose built within us. And we talked about it earlier, when you paint something, a canvas, or you write a song, or you lead a meeting, or something else that goes on in your life, it feels right, because maybe that's aligning with the meaning and purpose that God has given you. So generally speaking, we see this, that people are created for meaning and purpose. Now, what's beautiful about this is that the Bible teaches us that a person of faith in Jesus Christ is also defined as the masterpiece of God. Now, what's beautiful about this is that when a person recognizes their need of Jesus and his need reconnects them to God, we're defined as the masterpiece of God, created to do good works. Here's the thing. The thief's purpose, the enemy of your soul and my soul's purpose, sole purpose, is to steal, kill, and destroy the work of God in your life. The thief's purpose is to cause you to live below the surface of what God has designed you to live. He wants to steal life from you. He doesn't want to give you life. And so if the fears in our lives can be fanned to become full-blown flames in our lives, then fear holds us back. The insecurities hold us back. The dreams that we have and the voice that we hear, you'll never be able to do that, are those things that come into our lives from over the sheepfold into our lives to steal life from us. Steal, kill, and destroy. Steal our hopes. Kill our passions. And our dreams. Dash our dreams. Destroy our dreams. When you look at your life, you can probably at times be able to pull back and say, I recognize this in my life. That there's an enemy of everything that God is doing in me and through me. I see the enemy like a bully. And I don't know if I've ever shared this before in public. My latter years of my high school career, I turned it into a career. Failed grade 9 twice, or once, and spent twice there. There was a guy in our school, his name was Corey. And for 3 months, he tormented me every day, every single day. I can remember riding like for an hour on a school bus, because that's what it was like, and being terrified to get off the bus of this guy. I wouldn't walk the halls by myself because I was so afraid. And I can remember the final day that he came and approached me at my locker. And I was standing there with my head down, and he came walking up beside me. He's way bigger than I was. I don't know why he was picking on me. I was like tiny. And I finally turned and looked at him out of fear and anger. I was shaking, and I said, I don't want to fight you. See, I think the enemy sometimes is like that in our lives, that he tries to come in from the side to destroy and bully and keep us from doing the things that God intends us to do, keep us from the unleashed life. Now, Jesus, thankfully, comes into the scene and he says something very clearly in John chapter 10. He paints an opposite picture of this. He says that my purpose is to come and give you a rich and satisfying life. I hope that that kind of resonates with you, because I don't know what your perspective of Jesus is today or what your thought is about him, but he says very clearly, my purpose is to give you life. An abundant life is another translation of that. An abundant life, I actually wrote this down. Let me read it for you. That the primary mission of Jesus in your life and mine is to give us an internal sense of abundance no matter what is happening externally. That when we live into the design that God has created us to be through Jesus, he gives us a rich and satisfying abundant life no matter what is going on around us. What I love about this is that Jesus very simply and clearly invites people to follow him into that life. You can read about Jesus' life. He would just walk up to some people, and this is how he got his 12 disciples. He would walk up and say, hey, just come follow me. And these guys would go, okay. And they'd follow him. Or there'd be crowds of people gathered around, and he's teaching, and they're pressing in on him. And then he would say, just come follow me. And then he'd paint a picture of what that looks like. He says, you got to make me a priority. In the case, he talks about, you must hate your mother and father. And he's just saying, prioritize me over everything else. And then what happens is it thins the crowds out, and certain people follow. There's this moment when Peter, he was always getting himself into deep water, this one of his disciples, Peter. And there was this one day where Jesus was talking about future things, and Peter like confronts Jesus. He's like rebukes him. He's like, you shouldn't talk like that, Jesus. And then Jesus pulls him aside and he says these words. He says, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must turn from your selfish ways, take up your cross and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you'll save it. See, Jesus is painting a picture of an unleashed life. And he paints a picture that they understood of taking up your cross and following him. There's this element of followership that requires us to die to self. But if we choose to cling to life, if we choose to hang on to it as much as possible, Jesus says you'll lose your life, you won't find it. It's such a backwards way of looking at things. I find it so confusing at times when I read stuff like this, because my perception of really living is like climbing the ladder of success. I just got to climb, and get as high as I can. Or I've got to get that job that's going to actually, you know, propel me into the realm of the known and recognized. Or if I just get into the right school and get the right marks, if I get the right looking family, if I get the right size bank account, then that's really living. And Jesus says, no. Not that those things are bad or wrong. But if you really, truly want to live an unleashed life, you must be prepared to respond to the invitation to follow. But it's a followership that says, I will die to myself so that he becomes the priority in my life, that Jesus becomes a priority of everything that I do. I must die to myself, he says. See, you will not experience the rich and satisfying life that he offers you if you're not prepared to enter into that space. Your life will not be unleashed to be the fullest that God intends it to be if you're just clinging on to your life. He says, just let it go. Now, this is beautiful because what happens in this moment, and you think about the invitation to follow to the unleashed life and this rich and satisfying, you think about this element of what he calls us to as we follow him. And when that begins to take shape and walk onto that path, what happens is you get a new mission for life. You get a mission for life that is greater than you. This beautiful picture that emerges. See, here's the thing. Jesus didn't intend to die on a cross, be buried and resurrect 3 days just to only make us right with God. Although that's key. That's a key part of it, that his righteousness is placed on us so that we can be made right with God. That's key and that's an important part of it. But he didn't do it just for the sake of that. He does it so that we can be a people on mission. And the mission is to be a person or a people that is reflecting the message and the good news of Jesus and his grace and forgiveness. This is the mission that he gives us. See, your relationship with God is not designed just to sit. It's not just to sit in a space and listen every 7 days. It's designed to be a 24/7 experience on mission. Let me explain it this way. There is this side of mission that maybe will switch for you if you think about it this way, in the rich and satisfying life. When you look at your life, and if you're a follower of Jesus, when you look at your life, you have to step into this space where you understand that Jesus has placed you where you are for the purpose of being present for him. That you are a presence for him. So this means that if you're working in a factory and you drive every day to work going, why am I doing this? This job is just getting the best of me. Well, a shift of a person on mission is to realize that God has placed you there for a purpose to be the presence of Jesus in that place. It's same for your office space. Same thing. Your neighborhood, the places where you play. This is the design of mission for our lives. It's a greater call for us. Let me open this up for you even more. I feel like I'm not convincing you yet, but I'm going to win. That's the competitive spirit. How do I do this? Okay, so I went back to soccer this summer. I played for over 10 years at the German Canadian club, and it's over 35, so it's a bunch of old guys. And so I went back. I took a few years off, and I went back to soccer. And here's the thing: I didn't go back to soccer just to play soccer. I went back to soccer because I believe that God intended me to be there for a reason, to be the presence of Jesus in this space. So I go back to soccer this year, and tryouts happen. I make the team, and I'm now rubbing shoulders with these guys and hanging out with them, and fully being aware that I am going to be the presence of Jesus in this place. Now, let me be clear on something. I'm not like in the dressing room going, now, can I tell you about Jesus? You know, I'm not doing that. I'm just being me. I'm loving these guys. I'm showing an interest in these guys. And here's the thing that happened, and a friend of mine on the team pulled me aside early in the season, and he asked me a question about his life. He's going through a rough patch. And it was interesting to me because we had this amazing conversation about his life, and then we got together for coffee, and he's been starting to come to church. He's here this morning. And I'm not going to point him out. I asked permission to tell the story. And he said, yes. And he just said, don't ask me to come up on stage. I said, I'm not going to do that. He'd have to put his goalie gloves on to do that, I think. But it was interesting. We talked this week about this. We had coffee this week at my Starbucks. And I'm going to keep working that until you stop laughing. But anyway, and we sat down for coffee, and he, I'm kid you not, with tears in his eyes, he looked at me and says, Ron, there was something about you that I just knew I had to talk to you about my life. I was just present. I was just there. See, one of the things that I hope we as a church and we as a group of people get in our heads and our hearts is that in order to be the church that Jesus intended us to be is to be a people on mission, that we live our life in a way where we're present in the places we find ourselves, not just in this space, but in the spaces where we interact every single day. And all we have to do is say, God, just open up a space for me to live into. Help me not to be weird. Help me not to be strange. I just want to be your love in that space. Two words that come to my mind. The first one is invest. Invest. Will you invest in the space where God has you right now? Will you show an interest in the people that you rub shoulders with? Will you begin to pray for the people that you rub shoulders with? Will you show them love and acceptance? Will you step across that line and just enjoy who they are as individuals and say, hey, you know, do you want to grab a coffee? Do you want to go for lunch? And just be in the presence and allow God to do the rest. And so I ask you today, are you investing in anybody? And the second word is this, are you inviting? Are you inviting? I think two words that are key for us as a church is invest and invite. Now, I make no apologies for this. No apologies. Our 60-minute experience on a Sunday morning is designed in a way for the person of faith to invite their friends to it. It's why our 60 minutes is designed the way it is. It's why we open the songs the way we do, why we do courses the way we do, why we do media and drama and multimedia. We do all that for the very purpose so that we create a space for you to invite. Yeah, we're entertaining. I make no mistake about this and no apologies about this. We do entertain, but we entertain with a purpose. Jesus told stories that entertained, captured the mind and the heart and the imagination, and it drew people into him. So for me, when I think about our mission as individuals, but even our mission as a church, is that we are to be in that space investing and inviting those who are far from God. I believe that we live in a time, in an age when the church can rise up, and I mean the church as a body, as people, can rise up and be the hope and be the light in this desperate, dark world in which we live in. There's a lot of great things in our world, but there's this side of it that all of us are sensing right now, and general population is sensing that the destruction and the terror and what it feels like we're going backwards at times, and we get to live into that darkness and be the light on mission. See, for 2 years or so of our church's life, I had missed the part of being on mission. I had challenged and taught and tried to get the cultural DNA on this. And then God one day said, Ron, you're teaching on this stuff. You're preaching on this stuff. You're inspiring people to do it, but you're not doing it yourself. And so this summer, God allowed me to be in that space to be present for him on mission. There are literally thousands and thousands of people in our region that need to hear the beautiful message of Jesus and the good news that he offers. And I hope and pray that in order for us to fulfill the mission that he gave to us, is that each and every one of us who call this our church, call this our home, that we will live the unleashed life, and when we do, we discover a greater mission and the adventure of the faith that he calls us to. Listen to this song. Let's stand together. I hope that you've experienced a bit of the picture of what God intended for you as an individual, but also for us as a church. Next week, we step into year 4, and I really, truly believe that God has great things for us as we move forward. We've experienced some amazing things up to this point, and I believe his hand is on us for things in the future as well. Right after the service, I just want to remind those of you who have students, grades 6 through 8 or 9 through 12, we're going to meet at the cafe. Please please go right there right afterwards, and we'll meet you there, and we want to talk about what we want to do with the students this year. So let me say a prayer. God, thank you for the life that you call us to. God, thank you that you give us a greater mission that's filled with risk and obedience and sacrifice and adventure. God, I pray that you would just continue to work in all of us, no matter where we find ourselves in this journey of faith. We recognize that we are a church of people of all different stages of faith. And so, God, I pray that you would modify what we've talked about and deposit it into our hearts and draw us closer to you. Thank you, Jesus, for what you do, that you have come to give us life and life to the full, an abundant life. God, may we be a people who are unleashed for you. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. We'll see you next week.